At BP, we're not just talking strategy. We're making it happen, growing our upstream business with 6 major new projects in 2025. 4 already live, 2 more scheduled this year, expecting to add 135,000 barrels a day to peak production, helping drive long-term shareholder value. For more on our growth plans, visit bp.com/strategy at work.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. It is trade deadline season. The Brewers, not the best week. There was a lot going on this week. They did finish 3-3, including 2 out of 3 in Chicago against the Cubs. You would normally say that's not bad. That's pretty good. But the Brewers offense not clicking. Brewers lose a couple of really important players this week to injury. We will talk about that with my colleague here from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is the one, the only, Kurt Hogue. Hello, Kurt Hogue. You have a very nice shirt today.
Oh, thank you. I even dropped down one button from when I was covering the game. Oh. Although in honor of Ryan Braun Day, I probably should have just unbuttoned a lot to start with. Yes. That would have been the SoCal vibe, am I right?
Do you own any Remy t-shirts? I mean, that's the ultimate.
No, there is a press member who said he owns a couple somewhere from like the launch. Really? I was like, you didn't bring them?
Did that they give them away for free at the launch?
That would have been a great gambit. I've been really close to drunk purchasing a Remy t once. Actually, I wasn't. I probably had like one beer and was like, that's a great idea.
Oh, an artifact that only Milwaukeeans can appreciate from the Ryan Braun experience. Sunday was Ryan Braun Day. He was added to the Walk of Fame. Very nice. Very nice honor for him. We are going to talk about Ryan Braun, Kurt. We're going to talk about Ryan Braun, are we not?
What's there to talk about?
There's a lot. We have things.
Yeah. The career, the controversy, the Aaron Rodgers thing. Yes. Yeah, you're right. There's a few things.
We're probably not going to talk about Aaron Rodgers. I'm not going to lie. Also, we're not going to spend a lot of time on that because there's a lot of current Brewers to talk about, too.
But Remedy was brought up. So the 812 Steakhouse is at the forefront of my mind.
That's right.
Probably yours, too. And certainly at least 2 other listeners I can think of.
There are so many things to the Ryan Braun experience. There are so many things. Many great, some terrible, and then some just weirdly in between. That's where I think we find Remedy in the A12 Steakhouse, to be completely honest.
Jeez, yes, so and weird. Also everything starting late today and the game being delayed a little bit. Yeah, it's right smack dab in the middle.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that. I don't want to lose sight of Ryan Braun. I do of course have a conversation that I want to talk about. No special interview at the end of this one because I want to save as much time as possible for trade deadline discourse among other things. But we'll start. The Brewers did win on Sunday. Like I said, they were able to defeat the Miami Marlins finally after 2 really ugly games this weekend against a team that's among the worst in the National League. They lose 4 of 6 to Miami this year, akin to last year's team that got swept at home by the Oakland Athletics, which was the far and away worst team in baseball. And hey, they still made the playoffs. So it's not the talisman that it would otherwise be. But Kurt, I just think this team has not played well for weeks. I think they've looked bad for weeks, particularly on offense. They did get something good on Sunday, and that's the return of Devin Williams. He gave up a couple base runners, but Devin Williams is back. First appearance in 2024. He looked okay. I mean, a little rusty, I suppose. Got the first 2 outs, got a couple strikeouts in there, or 1 strikeout in there, I believe. So Devin Williams is back. That's good news. The injury news otherwise this week was really, really quite bad. But Sunday, Kurt, I don't know. Offense busted out of it a little bit, right? They hit some dingers. It's been rough though, otherwise.
They hit two homers, which by Milwaukee Brewers standards,
that's amazing.
Late is a lot.
Yeah.
The offense, like up and down the lineup, you have major questions about probably everyone except Jackson Churio. Mm-hmm. Maybe some small questions still about him, but certainly not major. Yeah. I think Willy Adames too. He had a bad day Sunday, but he's quietly hitting 300 this month and
consistent.
Is like, he's inconsistently consistent.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
Or consistently inconsistent, maybe. But on the whole,
he's fine.
Like the production has been solid. So you not like you're beefing with not a lot to beef with there. You're beefing with chicken if you're upset with Willy Adames at the plate. But everyone else, I got questions. I got big questions. I mean, you could probably put William Contreras like close to the Churio group, and obviously his numbers this year are the best of basically any healthy guy on the team right now. But certainly still questions with like the finger and what kind of production you can get out of him the rest of the year, and if playing him every day is actually the right call or not at this point. But yeah, I mean, you could run down just about every single guy on this team, and there would be a large question mark about them. Sunday was good though, but still overriding concerns about the offense, even if like the overall numbers are still pretty good. Kind of feels a lot like a 2022 situation. You know what I mean?
100% does it feel like 2022. Absolutely true. And I find myself really struggling to explain this, in that this team is six games up in the National League Central coming through the weekend. They are going, I think, almost certainly going to the playoffs. They're just in really good shape. And I still think this team has so many holes, and I can't even call them playoff caliber. If I mean, that's the wrong way to put it. They are not a team that is a caliber to work deep into the postseason, especially if Christian Yelich is not going to be available for the rest of the year. Now, we don't know that for sure. There's some dispute about how that's going to go. Yelich opting not to have surgery after he was placed on the injured list certainly looked like early, right after the injury, that we were talking about a season ending back issue. Yelich the next day said, maybe not, going to not do the surgery, going to rest in rehab. Matt Arnold kind of leaving the door open, though, that it is season ending. So I don't know where we stand there, but I think you're seeing a couple things. You're seeing Yelich's injury is obviously huge, 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 huge. I mean, two of your cornerstones, two of your all-star players in the first half offensively, Bryce Turang and Joey Ortiz, have been almost non-existent in the month of July. I mean, truly terrible numbers. Bryce Turang had a good day Sunday, and actually he had the hit that gave them one run in a 1-0 win over the Cubs. He had a couple of Johnny on the spot moments, and defensively he's awesome. We will talk about his incredible day Sunday, but he's gone from all-star to almost like unplayable offensively. He's sunk back down now. His numbers overall for the season are back to being pretty below average. Well, not well below average, but pretty below average, which is amazing considering he was doing all-star things for the first half. And Joey Ortiz has actually been worse in the month of July. These are 400 level OPSs at this point. And Ortiz as a third baseman, like at least Turang, you could say, well, he's an elite defensive middle infielder, so you can get away with bad months offensively. Joey Ortiz is the third baseman. Like, you can't have him hitting.
Yeah, but he's a pretty dang good third baseman.
I mean, truly, yes. It's just the defense doesn't serve you as well there as it serves you at second base. You need to have somebody who's hitting.
Sure, because it's not as elite. Third base is a premium position.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but like, it's Turang's a better defender.
Oh, agree completely. I'm not even comparing them defensively. Defensively,
okay, so we're saying the same thing.
We are, yes. Reese Hoskins had a nice weekend, but Reese Hoskins has struggled all year. Now, maybe he's turning the corner a little bit, but the bats that are here to hit, you know, they are not hitting, or at least the bats that were hitting in the first part of the season are not hitting now. And so it's all happening at once. I don't think that foretells what's going to happen in September and October. Like, we've had situations like this before where the Brewers have gone through a rut and come out the other side and look like a standout caliber team by September. But this is kind of what I thought the last 2 years. And then September came around and they were still that team. And then they got either didn't make the playoffs in 22 or got escorted out very quickly in 23. That's where I feel like we're headed. I don't see how this team is better than those teams, especially because they also don't have pitching.
No, you're absolutely right. Like, I don't think this team is a ton better than the 2022 team, but they're six games up. They're six games up. Who knows what the reinforcements will be. I have my doubts about what can work in the postseason and how this rotation's going to fare in the postseason. And like, if the outfield has any guys that can hit outside of Churio, like, these are all very real questions. But at the end of the day, like, maybe, just maybe, the Brewers are due to play well in October. Maybe, just maybe. I'm saying this in the face of like 3 weeks or four, whatever. It feels like a while now of them playing, and you're like, this is not good. This is not good baseball.
Yeah, I would say it certainly stretches back to the West Coast trip in Colorado and Los Angeles. They were not themselves on that trip. They hung in there 3-4 on that trip. That's fine. But they haven't been elite since then. You lose a series to Washington at home. You lose a series to Miami at home. This is a team that has been very, very good at home. Lose a series to Pittsburgh, which is, that's a decent team. They're a .500 team. They're above .500. They're the playoff chase. But still, that's three home series losses that I couldn't have imagined the May Brewers losing. And, you know, one or two is completely excusable, understandable. But when it's become a trend, and, you know, we haven't even gotten to the pitching where they have zero trustworthy starting pitchers that you're going to give the ball to in game one of a playoff series. I mean, Freddie Peralta has been really rough since the four great starts to open the season, and really kind of, I mean, he's not even their best pitcher since then. And he's really struggled.
No. Should we have that? Maybe later we can have that discourse, or should we have it now?
Who's their number one starting pitcher?
Who's the Brewers' best pitcher?
I would have said Tobias Myers, and then he went four on Sunday. It's Tobias.
It might be Tobias Myers. Legitimately.
Oh, it's just not where you want it.
That's crazy.
Great story, Tobias Myers. But
Colin Ray, respect, unlike you, who slandered his name recently. I don't remember which podcast that was, but just disrespectful.
Mm. And then he went out and had a tremendous start.
As Colin Ray does.
Here's what they have. They have four starting pitchers because they went through bullpen day instead of bringing up Joe Ross or whoever's going to fill that spot. Presumably
Joe Ross.
Joe Ross will.
He was with the club. I don't know if that was reported today. Now that I'm thinking about it, that might have slipped through my. I was not my cracks. The cracks. slipped through the cracks with all the chaos of Sunday. We talked to Hudson. We talked to Williams. We talked to Nick Mears. We got to get to that.
We will.
We talked to Braun. Well, we didn't really talk. We didn't talk to Braun.
Braun talked to you.
Braun talked to a general populace. And Joe Ross was there, and I don't think we said anything about that. So Joe Ross is in town, presumably to make a start like Tuesday.
Yeah, the 30th is what I saw, that he's expected to pitch against the Braves in the second game of that three-game series that opens up the week. So, he'll be back. He's a guy who's been out since, whatever, May. So that's one of your five guys. Your other four are Aaron Civale, who has just not had a good start. He strikes out some guys, but he has definitely not looked good. Tobias Myers, who is a little bit of a wild card, but has pitched well. Colin Ray also. I mean, no shade to those guys. They are pitching above expectations, but that's what they're doing, is just pitching above expectations. And then Freddie Peralta, ostensibly your ace, and just is not. That's just not how he has pitched this year. They don't have a guy, and I don't think they're going to get. I mean, the trade deadline always inflates our expectations of what they can do to fix a team. You know, like you could get a starter like a Garrett Crochet. You can get an impact bat in the middle of the lineup. You know what? They're not going to do that, either because it's their own volition or also because it's extremely hard to do. Even if you're willing to part with the prospects, it is so rare for a team to like take a leap forward because of who they got at the deadline. The deadline guys never work out like you think they do. Once in a while, you'll get a Yoenis Cespedes or somebody who completely transforms how you're doing. Daniel Murphy, but like nobody thought he would do that. You know, it seems like it's half of those moves are moves that weren't expected to work out like that.
Daniel Murphy.
Did I say? Yeah, with the Mets a few years ago, right?
Wasn't he already with the Mets?
No. What am I thinking of then?
All
right, forget. Yeah, I think if you
want to. CC Sabathia.
Yes. Okay. 2008 CC Sabathia.
That's a good one.
If you want to go back 15 years.
Jordan Lyles
does not count. He's on the other half of that equation. He's on the Daniel Murphy, the theoretical Daniel Murphy half of that equation. Thinking about the Braves guys in 2021, you know, Adam Duvall, Jock Peterson.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Those guys really helped them. But in the playoffs, more often than not, you just get marginally better. There's no quick fixes to what the Brewers are facing in terms of what they have as a playoff cadre here. These pitchers are still going to be their rotation. I don't have a question. I'm concerned.
As a front office person said in a conversation I was in last year, I think,
mm-hmm.
at the deadline, like the reality is, you're looking at like adding maybe a win by their calculations, like maybe half a win.
That's really optimistic.
For the Brewers case, like their playoff odds are basically 100%.
They are going to the playoffs, Kurt.
I don't know, but I would guess 99.9% or something. Fangraphs is probably up there too. Like that's probably what's going to happen at this point. So adding someone doesn't get you into the dance. However, it may better solidify you within the dance. And that's really hard to figure out too, because you're looking at a small sample. Like I loved what the Braves did a few years ago, where they just peppered a few different spots with guys with some proven track records, and it really, really worked.
Sure.
That's an approach I really like. You end up giving up like a higher quantity of lower end prospects, which hurts your system a little bit, but like, you keep most of it intact. I'm not sure what the Brewers are going to end up doing, but like, it feels like this team needs bolstering. It needs help in multiple areas. But on the same hand, like, they're where they are, and six games up in the division. And what's the trade-off? Like, if, you know, like, yeah, giving up a Brock Wilkin key in my mind, but like a Brock Wilkin or a Logan Henderson in a big deal.
For Garrett Crochet, let's say.
Yeah. Because, like, the Padres more than that. The Padres giving up Dylan Lesko for Jason Adam. Like,
insane.
I don't think, like, that's how AJ Preller operates. He wakes up and thinks of, like, while sipping his coffee, which prospects he can trade. And the Brewers may, you could argue, they're a little too prospect huggy on their side. That's certainly how they've operated. But it's, I would generally think, like, in terms of sustainability, that's a better process than, like, the Padres throw all your prospects out the window, because they're really good at evaluating their prospects, like getting the guys in the system, and then they're even better at shipping them out.
Mm. Tampa Bay Rays, similar in how they operate. Prospect Huggy, by the way, I want a t-shirt that says that, if you could work that out for me. I enjoy that.
like a, with a Huggy bear on it?
Yes, love that. Just like, yes, folded arms, love that. Prospect Huggy.
Should we talk Yelich? We haven't talked Yelich much here.
You're right. I want to get into some names, the trade deadline and the trade that they've already made. So we'll come back. Well, let's come back to Yelich. Christian Yelich is hurt, and that's a massive, massive blow to what the Milwaukee Brewers have. We know this back issue. It has popped up from time to time, played in the All-Star game, came back really not looking great, you know, starting with the Twin series and then the Cub series, goes on the injured list. And initially sounded like, the way he was talking, definitely sounded like, oh, he's out for the year. That is, there's a little more optimism now than there was then, but still, they have lost their one true great hitter who has an OPS well over 900. Kurt, he had the best, this is the best age 32 or above season in Milwaukee Brewers history. Unless you want to count Russell Branden, he had a really good run over like 130 at-bats. Where Christian Yelich was, well over 300 at-bats. There is literally no Brewer that has had a better OPS in an age 32 season or older. OPS plus, Robin Yount ties it. There was a Robin Yount season where he was, I think, 33. Really good, really good. 89 was that? I don't remember, but that was like an MVP season for him. This is as good as it gets. We didn't even realize how good he was, I think. And now he's gone.
Well, let's put some respect on our names. I think we were doing a pretty good job of realizing, like, holy smokes, this guy's really good. Still, I think... I don't remember the conversation, but a conversation was had like over the All-Star break. And I was like, you know what? It seems like Christian Yelich at this point is either like hurt with his back and it's really bothering him, or he's playing at a like insanely high level.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that's where it was with him. And then sure enough, we come back from the break and he doesn't run out this double play grounder in Minnesota. And I'm like, that's weird. Turns out the back's still bothering him. Great. Here we go again. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a huge blow. Like, Yelich had been bad before getting placed on the IL, but that was injured Yelich.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that cannot cloud your judgment for what you saw, like, leading up to that, where he was hitting everything on the nose. I still think there's a, like, reason, and, you know, the Brewers echo this too, some reason to be optimistic that he's not going to miss the whole year. Like, if he's opting to rehab this, and it's something that he was already playing through, and it's not too different than his previous injury, like the flare-up he had in Baltimore earlier in the year, and I feel it doesn't need surgery. Like, missing 2 months would have to, you know, mean it, like, he had some serious setbacks during it. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you'd be like, well, the back's just cooked. So, I don't know. I've got some optimism still, but, like, I don't know. Not about the lineup in his stead. That's for sure.
The way that we haven't gotten detail about what's going on in the back, you know, Pat Murphy briefly mentioned it was a nerve issue, and I'm not sure we knew that before.
That was the first time someone had said that publicly. Yeah, I think.
So what we're dealing with is not something that's going to go away. Like, maybe if he has surgery, they can fix that, but I doubt it. He has not had surgery on his back before. And it should be noted that he was awesome before Baltimore, when he went out early the season, he was awesome. He was unbelievable. And then he went out and it was so crushing because, again, their best hitter was all of a sudden out. And then the Brewers actually prevailed pretty nicely without him. You know, they were able, everybody was still doing great. Turang, Ortiz, like guys were filling in gaps beautifully. And then he came back and he was awesome again. It's possible, I guess you could say, that he could be not 100% and still be awesome. But also, is this is like the rest of his
career? The version of him we've seen at not 100% is not awesome, though.
Right, right. Yeah. And I go back to 2014. I know I've said this a few times, and to tie it in with Ryan Braun, why was 2014 such a collapse? Part of it was Ryan Braun, who had a really busted up finger, and he played through it, and he was bad, and they didn't have that middle of the order guy. They needed to just let him rest and try to get him by the end of the season, and maybe that fixes it. It probably doesn't matter in the long run, but it wasn't helping to have Christian Yelich in there with this injury. I don't even know if that was an option. Like, it seems like he was really in pain. So Brewers are going to hold their breath that they can get him back for a September run, maybe like mid September. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds about fair. It's such a bummer for the Brewers too, because you talk to this guy and when he's healthy, when he's right, and you get Yelich on like a candid day. And this is a guy who, like, for lack of a better term, is feeling himself. Like, he's feeling himself right now when he's healthy. Like, he realizes he can still mash at a high level. Like, he still bangs. He talked earlier in the year with me about, like, this offseason. He was healthy. He felt good. And he had an entire offseason knowing he had something at the plate that worked, that toe tap. Like, he just felt comfortable with it. And so he went into the season knowing, like, this could be a really good season because, like, I finally feel fully confident in my swing and the timing and everything. And I've had a whole offseason to work on one thing instead of spending an offseason trying to find something. And now this again, injuries happen in baseball, but this is, given the context of his last 5 years, this is really unfortunate. Last 6 years going back to that foul ball in 2019.
You know, maybe rest works and he is awesome again in mid-September and the Brewers get that jolt that they need and they actually make a playoff run, because that's, as we talk about it, like, this is why I'm going crazy. This team has 60 wins. They're the third best team in the National League and the first two teams are pretty dang good. And they're still only two games behind the Dodgers for a bye. So as I talk about all the problems, I just feel it's unfair to acknowledge that they have won a ton of games. And they could easily go on a run, even if they're not playing their best. They could easily go through the playoffs and get deep into the playoffs. They could even go to the World Series. It just feels like we have seen this play out before. And it kind of looks like it's following the same script. I think if they get Yelich back by mid-September, they're going to be in great shape. You get later than that, and then you don't even know what he's going to get you. You know, it's one of the, is he going to bounce back right away? Certainly he's had injuries in the past where he hasn't bounced back quickly, and you wonder if it's even worth trying to do it. It does make me wonder if they're going to go after a bat that they maybe wouldn't have at the trade deadline, which is Tuesday, which is coming up here in, you know, less than 48 hours as we record this. So you can't just like get a middle of the order bat without sacrificing a ton. I don't think Vlad Guerrero Jr. is going to walk through that door, but that's the name Murphy cited, right?
What are the tampering rules exactly?
I don't know what they are. I have no idea.
That to pull back the curtain a little bit. The question was asked about how does this, like, if Yelich is out, does that change your plans? And Murph goes, well, what do you want us to do? Get Vlad Jr.? And kind of everyone in the room's like,
that's a good idea.
Yes. Are you suggesting? Because this sounds great.
What a fascinating suggestion, Pat Murphy. That would be awesome. That would certainly re-inject some life, at least into, I don't know if we need to re-inject.
And it's also not going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, of course not. But that's the other thing. The Brewers just—that's just not how they operate. They don't. They're. This isn't.
They explore. They explore everything.
Love to explore.
Like, they call them Magellan.
They love to go around the world and then end up with what they started with. That's not fair. They upgraded last year. They weren't sexy upgrades, but they were perfect. It was such
a really good deadline for the Brewers last year, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew Chafin notwithstanding. Now, speaking of relievers that have been acquired at the deadline.
Ooh, good work.
Little Andrew Chafin drop in to get us there. Nick Mears, formerly of the Colorado Rockies, with the wild splits that he is amazing at home and terrible on the road. I don't understand that one bit. But Nick Mears acquired, we have not seen him pitch yet for the Brewers, but he was acquired for Bradley Blaylock, who was on the 40-man. So that kind of a sensible thing. Like, I, I think he was kind of taking up space. He wasn't really, I mean, he's been in the big leagues, but he wasn't really ready for that. So that's kind of logical. Who's the other prospect? Eugenier? Is that who went?
Eugenier Herrera.
Eugenier Herrera. Lower level prospect at this point. Interesting, but
however, if I may,
yeah, you like
him. I may go on the prospects. Yeah, I'm far more of a Herrera guy than a Blaylock guy. Now I have Blaylock. I had him ranked like two spots higher, but like low 20s. I just was never a big Blaylock guy after the trade. But Herrera is interesting because he's got like the plus pitch and a pretty built frame. So it's probably a relief profile down the road. But I certainly like this trade for the Brewers in the context of the other trades that yes. I've seen.
If this follows the pattern of cursed relief acquisitions, Nick Mears will not do much, and Eugenier Herrera will become a starting rotation caliber player later on here in five
but years. I think this one's different.
Okay, tell me why you think it's different.
Not on Eugenier, you're not turning out. I think he'll be fine.
Well, but Nick Mears.
This is also Colorado pitching development we're talking about, which that'll tie into Nick Mears. But I think Nick Mears is different. I think they're identifying a guy that they really like as opposed to just identifying a guy that's available. And that feels like what a lot of their recent additions have been. Like after they traded here, they needed guys that were proven and available, and that's what they got, and they stunk. And then Andrew Chafin was, he kind of just stunk. So Nick Mears is one of, I think I looked it up, one of seven or eight pitchers with a pitch that has a 50% swing and miss rate and a expected WOBA, or maybe just a WOBA, no, expected WOBA beneath 200. So like the slider is really, really plus. It might be plus plus. Mm. And the fastball is plus too. So you get him out of Colorado. That's another interesting part of this, as he was in Colorado. And like, as he talked to us for the first time on Sunday, he was very quick to mention that, like he brought it up on his own too. It helps that I'm no longer tipping pitches.
Oh,
and no one told him. So that's welcome to Milwaukee. Here I am, and I'm going to say things about Colorado's pitching development that are not kind. Don't get the sense that like it was going great over there for him. But it's good stuff. Like the command's not terrible either. You could easily see this working out for the Brewers. He's got multiple years of control. Like you compare this to some of the other deals that are out there.
Yeah.
And I really like it for the Brewers.
Yeah, that's true. The relief market's been kind of wild. You mentioned the Jason Adam trade. George Clausen, Port Washington product.
I watched him in high school.
That's right. That's right.
West Bend East. Actually, I think he got lit up.
he got lit up, really? Man, that's you must
that's kind of like this is the George Clausen tangent, but that's kind of his story as a prospect. Like he threw in the 90s, but the control was bad, and the West Bend East also had a kid that went to Notre Dame. I don't know where he is now, but like he hit a homer in that game, and it just like Clausen's Minnesota numbers in college were not good, they were pretty bad. But the pitch shapes are elite, and now he's figuring it out, which a lot of time happens.
Yeah, he's been awesome lately. He is now going from the Phillies organization to the Angels. That was part of the Carlos Estevez.
That is not awesome.
Which part? Going to the
Angels. Going to the Angels?
Yeah, they have a hard time
there. Not great, bub.
I mean, LA is fine if you're into that, but you got to get there first. And their
organization. No, it's not fine. We've been over this.
It's warm, I think. Traffic.
That's fine. Congrats on the warmth. There's other warm places in America that don't stink.
That's true. So Nick Mears, we'll see him this week.
Try El Paso.
Okay. El Paso. I don't know. Yeah. Good country song. Starts with a thing about El Paso. Out of Aaron the west Texas town of El Paso. Yeah, Aaron Jones, that's right. So we haven't seen Nick Mears yet. We do know, though, that the Brewers are down a couple relievers. They're down Robert Zastrzyzny and Brian Hudson, who both went on the injured list this week. Hudson kind of out of the blue with an oblique injury. That's obviously a pretty bad loss out of the bullpen. Now, like I said, they get Devin Williams back and they add Mears, but they're suddenly down a couple really important lefties. And Zastrzyzny was looking really good. I don't think that's like a crushing blow or anything, but he had been really good in the limited time he had. Hudson, of course, has been struggling lately, but is one of the best players on the Brewers this year. Not a good week for losing best players on the team to the injured list, Kurt.
I think we got a little answer on Hudson, though.
How's that?
A little answer on him, like why he was struggling.
Maybe it's because of
the workload, he wasn't right, et cetera, et cetera. It's a touchy subject with the Brewers, though.
Yeah.
Like,
why is that?
That's probably just baseball, but you cannot get real answers on it. You become the bad guy, which I'm fine with. I can bear that load.
Yeah, it's interesting because, just a mini tangent here, like in the NFL, I get it. Why you want to obscure what injuries are, because the defensive player could just like come and, oh, your ankle hurts. Let me wrap you up by the ankle. Let me find a way to make that injury worse because that will, you know, help us win. In baseball, there's no contact essentially. So like if your relief pitcher has an oblique injury, what does it hurt to say, oh, by the way, he has an oblique injury. Pat Murphy said at the very beginning, after Jacob Junis made the first start of the, Jacob Junis shoving, by the way, after he made the first start of the home schedule, home opener, it's like, oh, he's got a little bit of a scratchy shoulder, which was news to us, and he went on the injured list, but he kind of just volunteered that. So I don't know what the big deal is. I mean, yeah, he's pitching through some stuff. He might have to go on the injured list. Okay, that's fine. But yeah, Brian Hudson, that's a tough loss. So it sounds like maybe he'll be back fairly soon. Like it could be the 15-day minimum. Potentially, I don't know. What else do we have, Kurt? We got trade deadline.
Yeah, trade deadline.
Let's talk about some names. Many names have moved already. We're recording this on Sunday night. By the time you're listening to this, who knows who's going to be part of the Milwaukee Brewers organization? That wasn't the last time you checked. But guys like Tanner Scott have moved. Yimi Garcia. These are names that I would have normally thought the Brewers might be in on. Carlos Estevez, we just mentioned. Starting pitching, I think, is where it's at for the Brewers, and I Garrett Crochet is like the guy everybody wants, and I don't think the Brewers will be competitive for him, and I don't think they even necessarily want to get a guy who they're going to have for multiple years because that's going to cost a haul in prospects, and they probably feel pretty good about their young pitching coming up through the ranks. They're probably not necessarily looking for a guy that they can have for 6 years, 5 years, whatever it is. I got a couple starting pitchers that I like that I could throw out here, that being Jack Flaherty of the Tigers and Chris Bassett of the Blue Jays. Blue Jays do appear to be in sell mode. Tigers, maybe the jury's a little bit out on them. I don't know if I love either one of them per se. Bassett's expensive and Flaherty is just a rental, but that's where I would start.
I love the idea of Flaherty. But I'm curious to see what some team ends up giving up for him. Yeah. At some point though, like a large part of me just wants the Brewers to go get like pay for the rental. Just do it. Why not? That's probably not going to happen, as we've talked about. Are we guessing the guys? Are we throwing names out there that we think they will get?
We do this annual exercise where we just throw out a bunch of names and hope
we're just going to try to hit one.
Geniuses. Yeah,
we're going to try to hit one. So my sneaky name for starting pitching.
Tell me.
Zach Littell of the Rays.
Oh, well, yeah. The Rays are definitely, well, they're doing something. They're moving players left and right. So
they're doing something. They've done something with Zach Littell. He's pretty good. He's pretty good, and he's kind of probably not going to be one of the biggest names on the market. And he's got, I think, 1 year left of arbitration after this.
Okay.
And he's only making $2 million this year, so it'll be a really affordable year of arbitration because I think he came in as a reliever for the most part. So his workload's pretty high, but you know, if you just want to remake the Rays rotation, which always up the Brewers' alley, they could do it.
The Rays have already moved Zach Eflin, who was going to be kind of expensive. Today, as we record this on Sunday, Isaac Paredes, one of the better bats available on the market, moving to the Chicago Cubs. Once again, the Chicago Cubs entering the fray when I'm not sure anybody saw that coming. The Rays, though, are doing something interesting in that they seem to be okay adding players too. I mean, a couple teams are like this where the big leaguers are the guys who are maybe going to go back and forth. Not every deal that we've seen is just here's a big leaguer for some prospects. You know, the team that needs the guys now versus the team that needs them for the future. And I feel like the Brewers, with what, especially the kind of the tight 40-man roster they have, they could maybe make one of those deals. I don't know how you feel about that. If you think that's in the cards for them.
No, that's absolutely something in the cards for them. And the more you talk to people around the game, that's what they keep bringing up, is like, who are the Brewers going to trade on from their 40-man? Which guys in the big leagues are going to be gone on Tuesday? Like, this is a poorly kept secret at this point, I would phrase it as. Like, there are guys, I don't want to say the Brewers are looking to move, but they're certainly willing to move from depth, more so than like the top end of their prospect system, because that also allows them to make some creative deals. It just opens the door for more teams like that aren't necessarily sell only. teams that could be in the middle of it and still trying to like play this in between game. You think like the Giants maybe are in that spot, some other squads like that who aren't fully committed to selling. But yeah, that's right up the Brewers alley. I mean, Garrett Mitchell's a name that you hear tossed out. It's, you know,
yes,
basically guys adjacent to that. Yoel Piamps is another name. So we'll see who ends up being moved, if anyone. It's if the roster remains the same, it's not going to be because the Brewers didn't discuss any of those deals.
Yeah. You've heard a little rumbling about Eric Fetty, who is kind of perfect, I think, in principle, although he's pretty inexpensive. He's under contract for next year. I feel like a lot of teams are going to be after him, and the White Sox are looking to cash in.
Yeah, this is a name that's been floated a lot. Oh, whoa, 4.7 WAR on Baseball Reference. I'm going to ask for a math check on that.
That's a lie.
No, but I mean, like 3.11 ERA on the White Sox deserves a lot of credit.
Mm-hmm.
But 4.7 WAR, maybe it's shooting for the moon a little bit.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I don't want to dump water on the Eric Fetty thing. Like, it's been reported in The Athletic and other places, I think, that the Brewers are interested in him. I've heard that it's not as strong as other clubs at this particular point in time. Bummer. It is a name that, and a player that fits what the Brewers are looking for. But there's going to be a lot of teams still that are looking for starting pitching. And like the Cardinals, for instance, the Astros are going to be right in that camp. So we'll see. Like, you can also read between the lines a little bit. The Brewers are not often connected to players that they end up getting. So
yeah.
We'll see what ends up happening there. It would make sense, but I'm not expecting Eric Fetty to play out.
Yeah, Nick Mears came out of nowhere. No one talked about him, and that's how they roll. They are pretty...
Dom Catronio, shout out to Dom.
Oh, he had Nick Mears.
He had him on his radar on some show. I think he did a radio show last week.
All right, good job, Dom Catronio. I'm going to give you a couple more names before we move on to Ryan Braun. Sneaky ones. Nathan Eovaldi from Texas. The Rangers... I don't really know what they're going
to
do.
Are they selling? I don't think they're selling.
I think so, but
I think they backed out.
Yeah, I don't know. Another team that I don't think at this point would be selling, Christian Walker, though. He's a first baseman, which isn't a natural fit. But if they are looking for middle of the order, they now have a DH spot that was going pretty much to Yelich. And they could alternate first base with Rhys Hoskins. Jake Bowers becomes more of an outfielder, maybe. And then they would maybe be able to replicate some of that. The Diamondbacks, again, are kind of in the thick. Everybody's in the thick of it in the NL. But if they decided, because he's going to be a free agent, that they want to, you know, move on and get something for him at this point, I could maybe see a match there. But I think I'm kind of just pie in the sky stuff here, really.
I'm going to throw some lottery ticket names out there. Griffin Canning, that'll not get you excited, but that's a Brewers name if I've ever heard one.
Oh, Tyler Anderson too, if we're talking Angels.
Yeah, Tyler Anderson, but there's $13 million attached to it next year.
Yeah,
he's kind of old, right? I don't think they're super duper duper excited about that. Luis Garcia, the Angels bullpen. Austin Adams, they're probably done in the bullpen, but I'm not 100% certain. Austin Adams is an interesting one. Like, the Brewers still need to get length, and they know that. And I think ultimately that knowledge will win out. They're just kind of waiting this thing out right now. Like, the starting pitching market is yet to fully develop, I would say. That is a name that's come up. Cal Quantrill is another interesting one. I'm not expecting that one. That's the kind of dog I love to see in the Brewers clubhouse.
He's a character. You say Kikuchi perhaps, but he's more of a strikeout guy, not like a use your defense guy, which I feel like the Brewers would be more invested in doing.
There's one more name. Trevor Rogers, who just pitched against them.
Welcome back, Trevor Rogers.
Always been interested in Trevor Rogers.
I think of Trevor Richards.
Trevor Richards is another possibility.
I know.
I'm just gonna say Griffin Canning's the guy.
Okay. All right. Well, we will find out again. That's on Tuesday. So we will see if any of these names stick. I'm looking to see if I want to say a couple more just to have it in the ether so that I can say I definitely thought of it. But I think I'm out. I think that's it. All right. Real quick. Want to talk about Ryan Braun before we get to 3 up, 3 down. We have prattled on for quite some time. Ryan Braun, of course, honored in the Walk of Fame. Much grander Walk of Fame ceremony than we're used to, I think. And I think that's understandable. Ryan Braun is in a higher tier, I would say, of Walk of Famers. You know, he is one of the best players in franchise history. but obviously there's some baggage there. And I found myself thinking about the number on the facade. Like, are they going to retire his number? And I've always thought yes. But then I saw this presentation today, and it was very much like, let's celebrate Ryan Braun for the last time and just really give him a send-off of how great his career was. There were video packages. A lot of former Brewers came back to celebrate him. Prince Fielder was not there, which was a huge bummer, but he did have a little video message. I feel like that was it. I feel like they're going to try to maybe not do that. They have not honored anybody since American Family Field opened as Miller Park. The guys who are up there are all Hall of Famers. Ryan Braun's not going to be that. So if they wanted to stick to those guns, they could. I would maintain he's just in too elite a class to leave off, but there is the PED thing. And I felt like today was the farewell almost. I don't know how you feel about that, Kurt.
Yeah, I got the vibe. I don't know what it was, but at some point I turned to someone and I said, I don't think he's getting his name up there.
No.
Pointing to retired numbers. It just doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Like, it was the final send-off. I just pulled up my Walk of Fame ballot, JR.
Yeah, did you vote for him?
I did. Of course I did. I'm a big Walk of Fame ballot guy.
Me too.
Because I don't know if I am at my core, but at my core, I am someone who likes to do things differently. And doesn't like things that don't make sense. We've talked about this. My wife knows that. So I just voted for a ton of people because no one gets into this thing. I voted for Ryan Braun, Mike Caldwell, Jeff Cirillo, Giovanni Gallardo. No check by Craig Counsell, interestingly. This year. Although, I think next year I'm going to change that because JR, I might even knock on doors for this cause. Can you envision Ryan Braun or Craig Counsell being inducted to the Brewers Walk of Fame
while managing
the Chicago Cubs next season, in which, you know what, I don't think the contempt along the local lakeshore area is going anywhere for Craig Counsell. People keep talking about, like, oh, it'll gloss over. It has not glossed over not one bit yet. And not I don't yet. Think that's so. I don't think maybe, you know, hey, whatever, maybe next year it happens, but I don't think so. Mm. So how long I'm going to knock on doors for Craig Counsell getting on here next year. Most winningest manager in franchise history. He's got to be on there, right, kids?
Yeah. Giovanni, there's 0% chance they say that he gets inducted until after his managerial career.
He could get 90% and they would fudge it. And I would respect them for it.
Yes.
Yeah. Corey Hart, Sixto, Ben Ogilvie. How's Ben Ogilvie not on there?
I don't know. Criminal.
Dan Plesac, Bill Schroeder, get Rock on there. Come on, what are we doing here?
They will.
George Scott, Ted Simmons. How is Ted Simmons? What are we doing here? He got in the Hall of Fame before the Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
In Milwaukee. What? Jim Slayton, Greg Vaughn, Pete Vukovic, Ricky Weeks. All of them.
Ted Simmons is a very important case study to me. I don't want to go down a Walk of Fame rabbit hole, but Ted Simmons is
you're very, going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, I am. I'm walking right into it.
This is like right up your alley. Come on.
Walking right into it saying, I don't want to do it. Ted Simmons was here for a few years. He had one really good year, really. And his arrival sort of became one of the things that catalyzed this team becoming good. Raleigh Fingers has like a very similar career. Raleigh Fingers was a Cy Young and an MVP. You have to acknowledge that. But he's on the facade. He's like this unquestioned great in franchise history. Ted Simmons doesn't really get the same sort of, I would say, acknowledgement. I think it should be both or neither, you know, and not having Ted Simmons get the same acclaim as Raleigh Fingers feels like it opens the door for me to just make different cases for different people. Like, I don't think Raleigh Fingers' number should be in theory retired, even though, I mean, I think more numbers should be retired for this franchise, but he was only here a couple of years. He was only here like 3 years, 4 years. So Ted Simmons also a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
the same treatment.
Well, there's a devil on my shoulder. Now you can see it on the screen. The devil on my shoulder about Ted Simmons as a Hall of Famer. Like, he played 20 years and was worth 50 WAR. Like, Hall of Famer?
He was a Veterans Committee guy, right?
Yeah. And now that same devil on my shoulder is saying, Kurt, he had a 100 OPS plus in 5 years. You know what? I don't know if I'm going to vote for him next year.
Yeah. I would agree with you. I don't necessarily think he should be based on the breadth of work.
I'm not sure I looked that up before I checked his name. I think it was an auto check.
But if Raleigh Fingers is in, Ted Simmons got to be in.
Like, well, now you get into the retired numbers discussion. Yeah. And I don't think Raleigh Fingers' number should be retired for the Brewers.
Right, certainly not
over Cecil Cooper.
Yeah. No. Oh, I still love the idea of putting 15 on a wall. Maybe for Ben Sheets even. Okay.
I like that.
I don't know. Teddy Higuera is still the better pitcher in franchise history if we're looking at in total, and Higuera's not up there yet, so maybe not. Okay, let's you know, I got a little more brawn to come here, so I want to talk a little bit more about that.
Well, we're not done.
Eventually, no, we're not. But first we gotta move on here to some of the more granular details from the week. We have barely talked about these games. Let's do it. It is 3 up, 3 down. You know, I did mention Jacob Junis shoving 3 huge innings on Wednesday. And then that was a bullpen game, so they needed every ounce of it. 2 more innings on Sunday. This guy, he's like doing what Brian Hudson was doing early in the year, and that's just show up for a couple innings, erase some people, and then come back in a few days and be basically almost a piggyback with some other starting pitcher who, for whatever reason, isn't able to get deep into the game. And man, he has been really good. He's quietly been a really, really solid acquisition, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think we praised it, Jakob Junis, on this podcast. It's in a different role, not entirely different than we expected. I mean, he's kind of in this hybrid spot throughout his career, so not a total surprise. But yeah, he's been good, and this is presumably the spot for him and kind of a spot that they were missing a little bit in the bullpen. So yeah, I mean, you want to talk about some of the bullpen struggles overall. The trust tree, as Grant Bills called it. He texted me after the totem pole discussion and said, call it the trust tree. So he is near the top. I don't even know who's at the top. No one's at the top right now.
No one. Well, McGinn.
There is not Devin. Devin's back. Congrats. You are at the top.
Sure. So, when he's fully healthy and showing it.
He was throwing 98. We haven't talked about that
yet. You're right.
I was going to jump in right away with that, and somehow none slipped my mind. Yes, Devin Williams chucking 97, 98. I emojis for sure. Yeah, Jacob Junis has been good. Put him near the top of the trust tree.
Do you want to make Devin Williams your number one here? We could.
Devin Williams is my number one on 3 up, 3 down. Thanks, JR. I love deciding things on my own, thinking on my own, being an independent thinker and researcher and studier. Love that about myself. Devin Williams was throwing, you may have heard this on a podcast already, 96, 97. His average fastball, I think, was 96.0. Last year, it was low 94s. And the thing with that too is it like a consistent 94, because he hasn't popped a pitch at 97 since 21. He popped a pitch at 97.8
to
Xavier. I almost said Xavier Cedeno. I have a disgusting mind.
Xavier Edwards. Oh my gosh.
That remembers
what a pull.
The bad relievers of yesteryear. Xavier Edwards, who hit for the cycle. Was that going to be on yours?
I'm crossing it off the list now. First
one. Xavier Cedeno got for the cycle, and it was the first cycle I've ever seen in person. And I'm going to tell you, I did not know he hit for the cycle until someone said, is that a cycle?
You just called him Xavier Cedeno again, by the way. But Xavier Edwards, yes. I didn't know he was eligible for the
checking
cycle.
I'm checking myself into rehab.
I went to this game. I certainly saw the home run. Had to leave halfway through. Son had a tryout. Got him there. I had no idea he was a single away from the cycle until somebody said, oh, Xavier Edwards just hit for the cycle. When the same game, he hit his first big league home run. First player to do that since 2007. That is wild. That's really crazy.
That's a 2-for-1. Yep. Devin Williams totally changes the complexion of this bullpen. It cannot be stressed enough. This is not the same as getting any other guy back. It just bumps everyone down the trust tree a notch. And that's important because, well, it's just important. Trevor McGill's pitching, you just need Elvis Piguero in high leverage situations less. And that matters, JR.
We saw that this week. It wasn't good. Yes, I agree. Trevor McGill in the 8th. Maybe Craig Yoho in the 7th, if they finally call him out, please.
Hey.
Back-to-back?
Back-to-back days this weekend for the first time. And Sundays was a 6-to-1 game, so it wasn't even a save situation. You tell me, dear listeners, you tell me.
I wonder how many people know who Craig Yoho is because we talk about him every week, and then they're going to be so excited for us when he finally gets called up. Put him in the 7th, and then Nick Mears, 6th. I don't know, maybe another acquisition at the deadline.
Yeah, there's just a lot of different paths. Jacob Junis fits in here somewhere. Brian Hudson will be back. Piamps is pitching better if he's not traded.
Yeah,
a lot of options. Hobie Milner, maybe he's going to pitch through it. He looked better on Sunday. We'll see with him.
Indeed.
Big TBD there, though.
My number 2, fitting into the really big weekend for Rhys Hoskins, was his home run on Saturday night with a fan in the audience named Reese, who was saying, hit the home run for me. And then he did. A very clutch, a very nice three-run homer to put the Brewers up at the time, 3-2. That did not last. As we mentioned, Elvis Piguero was involved. But Rhys Hoskins, yeah, turning the corner maybe a little bit. Two homers in this series. Looked really comfortable. Got on base a bunch. You know, I, in discussing the struggles that this offense has had, this is a guy who can make a difference. Like, he is capable of getting hot, of getting through whatever has been slowing him down and really taking over when they need him. And maybe, just maybe, this is the start of that. Now, I'm not holding my breath, but maybe he gets hot and the
Brewers can get over. A little positivity from you goes a long way.
I don't like it. Doesn't look good on me.
Yeah, your kids are like, who is this?
Yeah.
Who's this guy?
God, they have 60 wins, Kurt. And I talk about this team like they stink. I'm an idiot. I'm terrible at this. But it's just, it just feels like the same thing that we've seen over and over and over, right? Am I crazy? They have 60 wins.
So I quoted philosopher Ray Sremmerd today on my Twitter. I'm going to quote fellow philosopher Taylor Swift on his podcast. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen this film before, and I did not like the ending.
Mm. Yes.
That goes through my head a lot.
Yeah.
Thinking about the playoffs. Anyway,
your number two?
Positivity to crapping on the whole picture.
Let's go.
How about some of those wins in Chicago? At no point, that's not true, but at very few points of that, did I actually think they were going to win those games. And then they ended up sneaking them both out. Bryce Terang had some big hits. William Contreras, go ahead, double in the ninth inning Wednesday off Hector Neris. Little DX chop to celebrate. Yoel Piams with the save. Brewers finished with an 8-5 record against the Cubs this year. That's worth noting. I don't really have a whole lot of insight other than how the heck did they win those games?
100% how I feel. And that's how, when I try to describe it, it's like, well, you know, they went 4-1 right out of the All-Star break. Oh, they should have been 0-5, but they weren't. They were 4-1. And I mean, yeah, that 1-0 game.
There's a lot of bad teams that don't win a lot of games like that.
You're right.
So I don't know if that means something, but.
Well, the defense doesn't slump. Their bullpen has been good enough. I mean, I say good, like they've been great at times. You know, like Jared Koenig comes into that game. He's healthy. Fine. He's healthy again after being on the IL for a stint. He puts two guys on with nobody out, and it's a 1-0 game. You're like, oh, it's going to fall apart. He ends up loading the bases. He gets the strikeout. He gets the out. I mean, they have
Wisdom and David Bodie hitting balls to the warning track.
It's the same thing that McGill did against Toronto earlier this year, right? Like it's this, like, I don't know how they did it, but they got through it. And then they, you know, McGill puts a runner on in the ninth, but he works through that. Like, I can't explain it, but they find a way to do it.
Speaking of the Cubs, what did you think of this Paredes trade?
I'm shocked because I feel like the Cubs are, even though everybody's really bunched up and they're like five games out of the nearest playoff spot, I feel like they're just way out of it. So I could be convinced otherwise. I could be wrong. So I am surprised that they were sacrificing who I consider to be pretty important assets. I mean, I think Christopher Morel is going to be great. I think he's just...
There's a really good player in there. Like I've given some grief because Council like kind of attached onto this guy and like his pet in a way that he didn't really do with young players here. Like, at all, if you think about it. And so like that has been kind of funny. And then like they keep hitting him cleanup and he has not been good this year, but like, yeah, I think you're right. Within there is a really, really good player. We'll see about the defensive side, but it's an interesting trade for sure.
Yeah.
Very, like a lot of variations of the ways this could go.
My number three is the Brewers signing their top two draft picks, Braylon Payne. Oh my gosh, Burke. Why am I drawing a blank?
Top three draft picks, JR.
Yes. So the top two picks came first. And now that means that you talked about how they kind of work top down. They see what their savings are early and then they apply that to later guys. And I don't want to go all the way back into the slot system, but Bryce Message, who is one of the guys that you figured they'd spend a lot of money on because he's a higher end high school arm. They spent a lot on him. They spent more than I thought, to the point that I don't know if they're, I don't think they're going to sign their fourth round pick now. Chris Lavonis, who was kind of also part of this
second round. No, it's their other second round pick.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Their fourth pick.
Yes, I'm confusing the rounds.
And Lavonis was kind of the arm I was most intrigued, like the player right. I was most intrigued by in this draft for sure.
I don't think they're going to have the money for it now, which is a hit, you know, and it's going to prevent what's going to happen is they're going to have some left over for later round guys. But I don't know.
The Brewers have the money for it. It's just a matter of like the Brewers went into this trying to replicate last year's draft. Like they just followed the blueprint basically with a few more deviations in like where the guys were taken, but they have the money to do it. It's just like you then get maybe one of the day three guys.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe that's okay, but it's not your intended result. Right. Or you could get four or five of the day three high school guys. Yeah. It's got to be a stressful time, though, for sure right now.
Yeah. And remember, we're not talking about what they can afford. This isn't, there's a pool of money they have to, they need to stay within. And if they go over that by 5%, within 5%, they're fine. And after that, they suffer some pretty serious losses of draft picks. So, like, they're not going to do that. And last year, they were able to make big savings. They overpaid for two guys in the top 10 rounds. And then they used the rest of their bank on rounds 11 through 20. And they got some really impressive kids in the system. This year, they've got a lot of those kids lined up, you know, ready to sign. But if they don't get the savings, they're not going to be able to do that. Can they afford to lose the 1 point, whatever it is, that's assigned to Lavonis? If they don't sign him, they would lose that amount of money out of their bonus pool. So that would also be a hit. It's really, it's just a really tough puzzle. Really tough.
All right, Jay, I'll wrap this thing up. Bryce Terang made two incredible plays.
Oh my gosh.
They were not the greatest plays of all time. They were incredible plays. But put together, paired one diving play going to left, one diving play going to the right, it was one of the more enjoyable defensive sequences I think you'll see. Like, the bases loaded too, everything going bad the last few days. Like, that kind of saved the vibes of the game for sure. And those were incredible plays. I don't know what OAA says about them. And guess what? I don't care.
99%.
They were phenomenal. And honest to God, I think those saved the game.
Absolutely. It's a 2-1 game. Tobias Myers has been laboring. Bases loaded, one out. The diving catch to his left was one thing. The diving catch to the right to end the inning. I mean, I was, where I was sitting in the fourth deck, I was trying to see, like, okay, can the center fielder get to that ball fast enough to keep a second run from scoring? And then all of a sudden the ball just disappeared out of the air because I didn't even count on Bryce Terang being able to reach that ball. It just didn't look like, it's an angles thing, but it didn't look like it was possible. He, again, his glove is kind of beyond reproach. Now, this is one of those things, like, when you come to the ball yard, you might see something you've never seen before or will never see again. That's how I felt about this. Back-to-back plays like that, diving catches. The circumstances are too perfect. I don't think you'll see that again. And then, of course, the Brewers end up adding on and win that game going away.
Also won't see a three-man umpire crew to start the game very often.
That's true. Yeah. Was it who was missing?
Tony Randazzo, I think, was taken to the hospital with a non-life-threatening medical emergency.
Mm. Yeah, hopefully he's okay. So that was weird because there was actually a really close play at third early in the game. It was a force play. Tobias Myers fielded a bunt and spun around, or a slow hit. I think it was a bunt. Spun around and got the force at three, but it was not clear. And so the second base umpire had to kind of come in at a weird angle and make that call. And it was a correct call. It's just, it was a little different. It was like, oh, there's a missing umpire. That's super weird. But Bryce Terang's glove beyond reproach. Now, the response to a good or great play from him is like, well, they got to just give him the gold glove. Give him the gold glove, or what's the point of the process? I don't think he's going to win the gold glove, Kurt, because OAA doesn't love him, even though we hate the way that stat has maligned our people.
I understand nothing about the gold glove process. I will attempt to understand nothing about the gold glove process.
Yes.
He probably should win one, but I think I'm with you. I think people are going to be, they're going to be rioting in the streets when they find out that he did not win one. But like, here's the other way to look at it. In my lifetime, the Brewers have won two gold gloves, and it's both been like screaming in your face center field
play. Carlos Gomez. Sure.
From guys that hit too. So,
yeah, you're right. That's always the
knockout. That's my default is like, oh yeah, no, they're not going
to
win.
I think they've gotten away from, are you a hitter to win a gold glove? I think a little bit, but it is still there. It's still weird.
It's reputation.
It is. You're right.
It's not so much hitter, but it's still reputation.
Yeah.
Like, Ian Happ keeps winning these things because he's 1-1 or whatever. Like,
yeah, it's like once you're in the club, you get.
I don't know how Ian Happ is gold glove winning.
Well, left fielders, man, none of them are gold glove worthy, so whatever. Okay, what didn't we talk about on 3 Up 3 Down? I only have one thing that we didn't mention, and that's Matt Arnold saying he didn't want to trade Willy Adames. He spoke with you guys earlier this week, and you know, that's, as we talk about guys who are moving from major league depth, I don't see a scenario where they would trade Willy Adames, but that's, you know, he's going to be a free agent after the season, and I guess in some weird, strange scenario, if you want to get a starting pitcher, that could be one way to go, but that hinges on believing that Bryce Terang or Joey Ortiz can be your shortstop and backfilling from there. I don't know. That's I don't know if they're ready to do that yet. So anything else that we missed that you want to mention? You just want to say like a name or two again, a possible trade deadline target.
I don't even know. Pete Fairbanks.
Max Scherzer. Pete Fairbanks is a good one.
Max Scherzer was like right up there on my list.
Yeah.
He's just a dude. And then the Rangers were like, nope, we're going to go for it.
Yeah.
So kudos to them.
Pete Fairbanks would be incredible content. Bring him to the Milwaukee Brewers. Kyle Finnegan also. Let's put that name on tape. Okay, I'm going to go back in time. We got a little more Ryan Braun discussion. I know, you know, we're at an hour here, but bear with me. It's a look back. It's a Ryan Braun theme, of course, on Remember When. We're not going back far, Kurt. We're going back to the year 2019 toward the end of Ryan Braun's career. Now, if you were at the game on Sunday and you saw the video playing, the video is playing honoring Braun throughout the course of the game. You absolutely know where I'm going with this. This is in St. Louis at Busch Stadium, September 15th, 2019. We're in the throes of a playoff chase. And Braun, at this point, aging veteran, came up in those perfect backyard baseball circumstances against Junior Fernandez. Bases were loaded. There was two outs. They were down a run. It was a full count. Everything hinging on what happens in this next pitch, or if he follows up the pitch after that. But like, this was a big pitch, and he hits it to dead center for a grand slam. Incredible moment. And again, like, they were in a really tight race. They had to stay one game behind the Cubs for the second and final wild card spot. It was the game itself. It's just a wild game. It ended up being 7-6 because Josh Hader allowed a 2-run homer to Tommy Edman in the bottom of the ninth to make it close. But he ends up getting strikeouts. Tyler O'Neill strikes out to end the game. The Brewers had allowed 3 runs in the seventh by Ray Black. Had surrendered those runs. There's a name. Corey Spangenberg had a 2-run homer for the Brewers in this game. There's a name. That brings Kurt all the way up to his camera. Lorenzo Cain homers in the eighth to make it 4-3. In the ninth, a lot of walks. Ben Gamel, Travis Shaw walked against John Gant. I think actually Grandal. Yasmani Grandal with one out also walked. Tyler Webb, former Brewer, came in. Faced Mike Moustakas, got the flyout. Ed Cedar, who was there for Ryan Braun Day on Sunday, elected not to send Ben Gamel to try to tie the game. He would have been dead meat. The throw was perfect. He would have been completely out. So that leaves it up to Braun. Junior Fernandez comes in, and that moment happens. It's incredible. He's jumping and screaming, rock. Bill Shorter loses his mind on the broadcast. Very endearing stuff. Next two batters reached. Brewers didn't score again, though. Like I said, Edmund got a couple back. Braun had been struggling with lower back issues. It's very relatable, having your star with lower back issues. But he obviously got this one. That kept the Brewers one game behind the Cubs. Brewers ended up then after this game, they're 11-3 in September. This is one of their legendary September runs. The Cubs win the next day too, and then lose 9 in a row to completely collapse out of the wild card chase. Brewers win the next night, and then they took an L like maybe 2 nights later, and then won 7 straight. So they end up winning against the Reds on September 25th, which, you know, still like a week left. They clinch that playoff spot. It's a 9-2 win over Cincinnati. And who hit a grand slam in the first inning? That'd be Ryan Braun. Of course, you knew that answer. Famous quote from Ron, he was 35 at the time. I'm not as good as I was, but in big moments, I'm the guy still. And that is the case. Now, I care about this moment deeply. And Kurt, there's a possibility there's a little emotion here. So I'm trying to keep it composed. This was the first moment with my son watching Brewers baseball where my son understood everything that was happening. 7 years old. He understands what a grand slam is. He understands all the details of what's happening. He is watching this game with me in the basement. And Braun hits it. And I say to him, Owen, I think that's gone. I think that's gone. And I will never forget this moment. The first moment that a father and son have where like both parties understand what's happening with this baseball game. He loses his mind. He runs outside. He's got the Brewer flag. He's in the street. He has taken his shirt off. 7-year-old Owen has taken his shirt off and is running around. So excited about this moment. And that is, to me, Kurt, this is what makes Braun so difficult. He is polarizing. And he has this chapter. The memories are inextricable. Like, you can't just subtract how he made Brewers fans feel, even though there's this sort of dark cloud. And as I watch this presentation, I'm still conflicted. Like, I can't get fully behind it. There wasn't a session where he responded to any questions about the PEDs. He does, you know, clearly doesn't want to revisit that. The Brewers don't want to revisit that. I don't blame them. But, you know, there's still some stuff that we don't know. There's still, like, that press conference he gave is still kind of the nail in the coffin. There are guys like Nelson Cruz who were suspended. Yasmani Grandal for PEDs, and no one thinks about that when they think about those players. Braun was too high a level star and then gave that press conference, that defiant press conference that everyone remembers. And that stuff is going to stick with him forever. And it sticks with me forever too. I don't know what to do with that. All I know is like the stuff that he gave Brewers fans it's just never going to go away. And it brought them to a place they had not been in their lifetime. So that's very complicated. It's a really weird feeling is where I'm going with that. That's all I have, Kurt.
Very good.
Are you disappointed I didn't get a little emotional?
I was hoping for crying or Owen. Well, I guess you're not at the house.
I
was going to call for Owen.
He talks about it all the time. I mean, he was sitting next to me when they played this on the video and he was psyched. I was psyched. It's a great moment for me. Like just being with my kid and, yeah. and my kid being into it like that. It was great, but it's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. That's enough. Let's shut it down the way we do every week. And that is with Kurt's take of the week. Here it is, Kurt Blanche.
So I swear I was going this way before you started talking.
Okay.
So I'll just pick up where you left. I think it's fitting on Ryan Braun Induction Day to talk about this some more. And I do think you hit on a lot of the points of like what makes this like so difficult, I think, for Brewers and people who grew up Brewers fans and people who are Brewers fans and like people that are around the organization is, and there's another element too for it for me now, at least like as a reporter too, and this may be the same for some fans as well out there, but like there's a level of whitewashing that I feel has happened and is happening of the PED scandal within the organization and like maybe within Braun himself, where it's like it is the faux pas thing to talk about or mention. I'm not saying they should have brought it up today, but like some sort of it could have, like this is a huge part of the story. And the timeline, including that press conference and the things that were said, are pretty bad. Pretty bad. And like I can understand why a lot of people would feel cheated by this as well. And like in the grand scheme of things, like it's not, you know, cheating in baseball is not the worst offense in the world, but like the way it went, like it crossed moral lines with how the whole process ultimately played out. And to just, yeah, to fully like gloss over it and act like it never happened is, it just does not sit well with me. Yet on the same hand, like you talked about, I was that kid in 2008. I was at the game when Ryan Braun hit the walk-off grand slam against the Pirates. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about it, but in our Q&A that you and Todd and I did about the Brewers, I mentioned this, like that was my first moment of like, holy bleep, this is awesome. Like this sport rocks. This is so cool. Cause up until then it had been low stakes baseball. Like, oh, this is fun. Like I enjoy this. But to hear like the way that his hit sent the crowd into a frenzy, and that's still one of the biggest moments in franchise history, usurped by a hit he had 3 days later, which is a top three hit in franchise history. Like the list of top 10 moments in Brewers franchise history, Braun's got what, four of them?
Yeah.
You extend that list further down, he's got even more. Like he's intertwined with so many great moments and like stuff that sends you as a kid into like a mass hysteria. Like I ran in the street in 2011 as a young high schooler after he hit the homer against, or just 2008. So middle schooler hit the homer against the Cubs. Like I was the one in the street, like losing my mind. The Brewers are going to the freaking playoffs. That did not happen. Yet we touch back on the other stuff. And like, as a reporter now, it just doesn't sit great. And like, I voted for him. Obviously I think you honor him for what he did. But yeah, it's complicated, and I think it's okay that it's complicated and you don't have a great answer for it. But yeah, that's I think that's sort of where I sit now. And then there's another tie to it with me personally, like the suspension in 2011 is how I got into reporting, and like I was like, oh, this high rocks. I love this. So like that fed my passion for writing and writing about baseball and like trying to find out, you know, what's going on behind the scenes and all that stuff. So just another like personal tie to it as well. And a lot of mixed opinions on him. I don't blame people that like overlook it at all, not one bit. And I don't blame people that like are burned by it. So yeah, just kind of echoing what you were saying, but it's complicated.
There's a broader conversation too about, this is going to sound bad, how bad steroid usage is and how big of a sin it is, because there are guys who've done a lot worse. I mean, not to downplay the steroid thing. It's not great.
There are guys playing in baseball in the All-Star game.
Marcelo Zuna, who has done much worse, right?
Totally, yes. There's, I mean, not even comparable, really.
Right.
You know,
and have like, you know, this is stuff that's not just accused, you know, like they have, you know, gone through the legal process here. And steroid usage hurts you. And you lie about it and you give that press conference, and that's a really tough look. It's so bad. There are worse things, and I'm not trying to bargain it away, because it is obviously still nagging on my mind, and it's not something that I can easily just dismiss. I cannot dismiss that. But it also, sometimes we put it on a pedestal because we just think of cheating in sports as just this ultimate sin. And it's not. There are worse things that players have done, and they have been forgiven and celebrated for it. And that's kind of weird. That's just what sports does to our brain, I think.
Yeah, and players who have done the exact same thing as Braun, and it is fully whitewashed over.
Nelson Cruz.
There's more context with the Braun thing. Like, I would wonder if he's, you know, deep, like, in his earnestness, if he regrets cheating more, or as much as like the giving the press conference. That's probably weighs on him too.
100%. I think it's the press conference that he regrets more. If I had,
yeah, to. I mean, the press conference isn't necessary without the cheating, but,
well, of course, yes.
I don't know. It's good for the discourse.
It is good for the discourse.
And as you know,
we love that.
That's all that matters, right?
Indeed. Indeed. And we'll have more discourse as this week unfolds. I don't think we'll do an emergency pod this week based on what they do at the trade deadline. We may, I don't know, who's to say. The Brewers will be playing the Atlanta Braves a lot over the next couple weeks. They have them in town Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. Then the Brewers go out east. They play Washington and then right back to Atlanta to see the Braves again. The Braves have been struggling real bad. They did win back-to-back games Saturday, Sunday, but this has not been good for them. Max Fried is out. Ozzie Albies is out. Already Ronald Acuna and Spencer Strider are out. Matt Olson is not the player he was last year. This is just a disappointing Braves team. So this is an opportunity to make some hay, I suppose. Granted, that would have been what the Marlins were, and it didn't work out. So we'll see. Kurt, any last thoughts before I send you away finally?
Why wasn't JC Mejia at the press conference?
JC Mejia, the suspension not tied to his career because people don't really remember JC Mejia anyway. So going through the list of names of guys who've been suspended for performance-enhancing drugs, wild stuff. Like, there are a lot of guys on there that I completely forgot about. And they got suspended hard. Like, I mean, this guy's like Robbie Cano. Oh, yeah, he got hit for a whole year. You know, Marlon Byrd. I didn't remember him losing a whole year. You know, like, there's a lot
of guys. Melky Cabrera?
Yeah, Melky Cabrera is there. You know, Grandal's always one that I remember being surprised by. Like,
totally forget about that.
I know, for sure. Okay, he is Kurt Hoag, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. That is it for us this week. Again, we might be back midweek, more likely. We will be back at the end of the week chatting all about it again. We'll talk to you guys again real soon. Thanks for listening to Microbrew.